in credit cards, enjoyed campus life, and he took on more jobs to pay it down. He dropped out of school, he moved home, he paid it down. He was going to pawn shops trying to keep up with his credit cards, and he thought his career as a lawyer was going to be over now that he had dropped out of school, and he literally took his own life at that point.
You also talk about the decline of community banks and the increase of pawn shops and check cashing services.
Yeah, and this is really the institutional aspect that's neglected about banking deregulation. What happened with the end of Glass-Steagall laws and when Citibank, orchestrated by then Secretary of Treasury Rubin, who became vice president of Citibank with the merger with Travelers Group, what happened now was this cross-marketing vision of the trillion-dollar company that was too big to fail. And the objective here was to get middle and upper middle class households and bundle a wide array of services, insurance, car, auto loan, mortgages, student loans, brokerage fees, etc. As a result, it meant the more disadvantaged communities, your local community bank that didn't have access to those more profitable services, they saw their bottom line suffer sharply. They ended up essentially going into mergers. And what it's meant for people of color and lower income households is that unless they have access and the capability of buying many different services, banks closed in their neighborhoods, mergers occurred and branches were shut down, and in many cases they were replaced by a cash checking store or a pawn shop that their lines of credit were funded by the major banks that bought out the community banks.
How did Citigroup and other financial conglomerates profit from the credit card industry?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe, but Citibank and some of the others haven't learned, because 20 years ago, Citibank was also technically insolvent and was on the verge of being regulated out of existence by federal regulators. And they put all of their resources into the credit card gold rush. And that was because the end of the federal usury law, based on a 1978 Supreme Court decision, meant that they could move their headquarters, which they did from New York to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and literally there was no limit of what interest rate they could charge. And with that in place, and then the 96 Supreme Court decision that lifted the right of states to regulate penalty fees, that meant that there was far more money to be made lending money to people than there was making products and services.
Talk about the use of credit cards over time and how the history of them, and especially how it has changed over the last 30 years.
Yeah, the extraordinary issue is, if we look at the history of America's cultural attitudes towards credit and debt, is that we viewed savings as an attribute to be valued, prudence and stewardship of resources. And people in debt were viewed as people who just couldn't manage their personal finances. And Benjamin Franklin was very clear in Poor Richard's Almanac that a penny saved was a penny earned. What we saw was the major mass marketing campaign of the 80s and 90s, where the profitability of finance to consumers was far greater than lending money to big banks, that this essentially became turned on its head. And so those people who were most creditworthy were those who were least likely to want to demonstrate that they needed credit. And that's where you see the color-coded credit cards emerge. You know, the gold card, the platinum card, even the black card. These were for people that wanted to show their friends and colleagues that they didn't need credit. It was a convenience. Today, of course, now with declining real income and the cost of living in America today, what we've seen is that greater inequality in America has been masked by greater access to credit. And in fact, these last two recessions are the first recessions where we've seen a lack of improvement in wages, which has fostered greater dependence on high-cost credit for families to survive.
And the lobbying by banks for greater access to consumer behavior, information about it?
Yeah. You know, what we're seeing more today is behavioral profiling. And one of the big civil rights issues today is that your credit history is being used for so many different reasons than ever before, like getting a job. And we've got no control over quality of your personal financial behavior that's being used by corporations to make decisions on your behalf.
I want to thank you, Robert Manning, for your work. Credit Card Nation is his book, The Consequences of America's Addiction to Credit. He is the founder of the Responsible Debt Relief Institute. And that does it for our broadcast. If you'd like a copy, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shrifa Dokkadoos, Sarah Mate, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Peter Curry, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julia Crosby, Karen Renucci, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Samantha Chambly. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's going on? It's DJ Ev with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, February 23rd. Further, Phil Lesh and Bob Weir at Radio City, first of two nights. Michael McDermott, Heather Horton, 7:30 Sullivan Hall. Flying Colors, Eli Charleston, Sullivan Hall, 11 p.m. 9 p.m., Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, Captain Kirk's Birthday Bash. First annual Shatner Ball with Star Trekkin', the Raspberry Brothers, Star Trek 5, Fall on Your Sword. Looking ahead to Wednesday the 24th, further Phil Lesh and Bob Weir, Radio City, their second night. 7:30, Sullivan Hall, Hikon's Fault, Late Night Motive, Neighborhood Social. 11 p.m., Sullivan Hall, Reckoning, Eli Charleston. The Black Eyed Peas are at Madison Square Garden at 7:30. And at 7 p.m. in the main space, Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, concert for Solange Ralston. And looking ahead to Thursday, the 25th, Niaz, music for the 21st century, blending contemporary electronica with Persian folk songs, medieval Persian poetry, and more. That's at 7 p.m. right here on campus. 7:30, Sullivan Hall, Dopapod, Higher Organics, Sea of Trees, A Royal Crime, and Tycoon Dog. Lulu's Blue Night with Tail Wagon, 8 p.m. Lulu's Village Pub. Ken the Rocket Corbin Friends, 7 p.m. Grey Horse Tavern. And at 9 p.m. Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, Scion Garage Show presents the Dirt Bombs at Davila 666 in the main space. Look ahead to Friday the 26th, Buttered Soul at the Brickhouse Brewery. 7:30, Sullivan Hall, Who's Confused, Color Reporter, Afro Skull, Otis, Ben Ruttenberg. Dead Ahead, Big Daddy's, 8:30. 8 p.m., Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, Franz Nicolay, Tim Fight, and Zeus. Stevie Cochran with the Soul Brothers, Barbecues, 9 p.m., G-Biss at Once and For All, Joseph and Friends, Grey Horse Tavern, 9:30, and at 9 p.m. at Diggers. Who are those guys? And if you're a local venue, band, or promoter, and you want to get your gigs on the concert billboard, send an email to Scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And as always, thanks for listening to the Concert Billboard right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. Stay tuned for an abbreviated version of Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. You have no idea how close I came to not being here with you this Tuesday evening. Or maybe even any future Tuesday evening, the way I had to drive to get over here. It's incredible, the Kafka-ish day I'm having. I just got in from driving all the way from Manhattan, where I had to go all the way into Manhattan, literally, to press a button and then come all the way back out. That's the kind of frustrating day I've had. And that's 5.5 hours right there, because it's rush hour, it's the middle of the day, everybody's being stupid, SUVs are on the road, it's raining, there's ice. I have never on any one single 24-hour period had so many people and machines conspire to screw me over. But it's all worth it, because I made it back. But you know, I'm so stressed out right now that I need to just sort of relax, take a swig or two of something, and maybe listen to some music from Scotland. Yeah? Oh, yeah. And after that, maybe some native speak from Scotland, huh?
Gran Hamley agus Unam Jackson eli yel hiun ni cherevalf. Fisrach agus se och gwyl feil rychfa cool charyn, car bwt seil as och gwyl anan hala chanysnach fern rai uysta tuo, spisio hal na maelach, bia tajach ag miala as a dolg am aga wad fisgar. Gwtach ca tiis coffi stari hyn mwysunoch gwyl ach agus barbecue. Snach o fisgar maelach, Eter miala agus dawod fisgar. Rwydach ddrym iddi eif sy'n siw a'i di a se hawn na ffeil rwych gael cwl chari yna siwch. Crynwch o'ch chwl y ffrach ag ydy brwyna ddes falaf gadlis agus gael rwych gael cwl chari. A smwydrych mi estat yn ei chymi at na smw agus a fisgar bych gyliord. Ac roi'n ma hawn ddi chianwch. Mae'n gael feich gynnas y fal anna hewch anna stjorn efa gwdrach biad o gwbod eisyn nhw. Pe mae gwbod gydrygw iddi ni be, stara mae gwbod iddi ni be agus fe mae cwynwch ag am ddi ha bydig eitha mae'n gwybod ys fiach andi bach o lai ag ein hi'n dda hi'n yn sios ffemi cwman am chyn eich sgan gael mi a tiw goi a nach oedden gyda byw cawl dy hiol nid y hos i stwyd bydig sgael fforag at yna sy'n dy gyda gyda hw gwyd ystwy mae'n byddin dy fferi hiwn gyda dy sioch a fydd yn o'r cianoch sy'n rwych tor iddy ni bys fel y gradym a mi hiwn gyda dy gy mandolin ein agos fiol sa mi sy'n Ach, ach, lwychdiw, hwn, siach, ach, hwn, ach, hais ymwn, siach, ach, ach, rhedrydw, ffrisi hwyl mi oro.
Nad chai mi sias gan y mawenion dje, gwr nes y ffal am ffach go ie, esco y leis ysgrwn yn sje, fydd gies, diwn mi nad
All right, well, let's fade this down for now. I'll tell you what, we'll go out with this, because that's I really like that song. But I feel better, just that those few moments of Scotland kind of brought me back down to earth a little bit. And I'd like to actually go right back to Scotland. In fact, resume where we left off last week, where I was at the Whiskey Society. Oh, boy, I'd like to be there now. With my good friends Mutant Rob and Peg, and we were basically tasting all kinds of different whiskeys and talking about life and all kinds of other things. So let's go back to that, and we'll have a regular show next week when there's no stress involved. Let's go to Scotland and enjoy the time there. So we're actually in the place where Trainspotting took place?
We're in Leith, where the story mostly takes place. But not in the actual... This building, the story... No, the story doesn't. They're actually, during the day, people do Trainspotting literary tours.
Really?
Where you can go and visit the actual places that are mentioned in the book. I don't know all the pubs. I've been to a lot of the pubs. I don't recognize them all necessarily. But
this isn't the pub that they had that big like fight where they smashed a glass over somebody's head.
Apparently, that pub I had heard closed down, and people tried to save that pub. But I've never been in that one. I'm not sure if that one. Seeing as the movie was mostly filmed in Glasgow. There's only a couple of scenes in Edinburgh. Because they thought Glasgow looked more urban. Because if you filmed it in Leith, it would be like, oh, quaint cobblestone streets and medieval buildings. And it just, you know, the image of lots of junkies there just, it wouldn't jive in the movies.
Sure, there are lots of junkies here.
Oh, yeah. It's a serious problem.
Well, sell the place short. Junkies, and they deal with the cobblestone streets and the old Victorian houses just fine.
Medieval houses, too.
Medieval, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Still a serious problem here, but lots of people actually have used lots of drugs and somehow managed to maintain normal lives, so it's not like you've got the stereotypical junkies of just, you know, people sort of nodding off in the street. You have a few of like that. Yeah. So, you know,
we were talking about as we were driving over here, we passed a particular pub that you guys warned me not to go into because it's a pub that attacks.
I'm not going to mention it by name.
I'm not mentioning it by name, but it's like it was described as a violent pub. Like pubs have different clientele, but this one caters to violent people, people who basically like to attack foreigners.
I don't know if they actually have a thing for foreigners, but yes, I've seen a couple of pubs where people have been beaten up outside.
But this one had a particularly great story. Did they not actually manage to get their name into tourist books so that foreigners would go in there and get beaten up?
All I know is their name used to be in tourist books before it was bought up. So that tourists would, in theory, see this and go to this pub, but then I used to see people being beaten up by locals.
So I don't know
if it was to get tourists to go so they'd be beaten up, or just only certain kinds of tourists would be beaten up, or maybe the same couple of people.
But it was
the same two people that kept going over and over.
People would beat up folks who weren't from the town. And what happened was they beat up the wrong person one day.
The story is they beat up the wrong person. And
what did he do in revenge?
He bought the pub and transformed it.
Transformed it, changed it. What, repainted it, or what did he do exactly?
It became a diva singing, what's the term?
Transgender-friendly
karaoke bar.
Turned into a transgender karaoke
queen,
bar.
Queen singing. There's a term I'm missing.
A gay bar.
No, drag queen.
Okay. And so that was the end of that, or was it?
Well, supposedly the locals just kind of gave in and started going anyway and just dressing the part.
But you're saying that instead of just walking away, they actually went to the gay bar and dressed up in drag.
After a time, this is the story I have heard.
So they adapted and they actually came dressed.
Now a violent drag.
Now it's a violent drag queen bar. So they come and they still beat up the locals, except now they're dressed in drag to fit in with the bar's image.
So I hear.
That's quite a story. That's worthy of a movie in itself. Okay, we have more.
Well, you know, it's a sequel to Billy Elliot.
And we have a printout now.
They were out of the of one of your selection, and
they were out of the one I wanted.
Yeah, unfortunately, and that, but that distillery, every whiskey is very, very different from one another. So I didn't want to take a chance. So what I thought would be interesting, because I was telling you about it, was to get a Japanese one, and the Japanese one that they have currently is this Timber and Bonfires one, and I think I've tried this one before and it's very good. I hope it's the same one I tried before that is very good.
It smells very
nice.
116.13. I think I've heard about that one.
Yeah, 116.13 has a fine reputation in these parts.
Oh, that was 112.13. I'm sorry, that's a different one I'm thinking of.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It rings a bell. Yeah. But, so it smelled really nice, and I thought, well, it's unique, it's from Japan, we could give it a go.
It's 23 years old.
It's culturally interesting, it smells real nice, it's worth a sip, I thought.
It's called Timberwood Bonfires. It says this distillery was founded in 1934 by Masataka Takatsuru. who studied at Glasgow University in 1934. That was before the big global misunderstanding that involved Japan.
Indeed it was. So he studied at the right time, because actually a little later, and it might not have been so, you know, welcoming in Glasgow.
He chose Hokkaido? Okay, I'm supposed to know what that is?
Hokkaido, I think.
What does that mean?
Place in Japan.
Place in Japan, okay. Because he thought it reflected the natural conditions of Scotland. This sample is bronze gold from a refill hagi.
Oh, that means usually it's hogshead. It's the type of cask.
This was put in a hogshead. If I was vegetarian. Oh, I don't. How am I supposed to know? You know, it's in Scotland. They could do that.
You could. I mean, I think that it would limit the supply of how much whiskey you could really fit in, unless you had a ginormous hog, really. But
they have really big hogs here. They eat lots of haggis and deep fried Mars bars.
How can hogs eat haggis? They've got hogs in there, don't they?
No.
Or is that just sheep lungs?
Sheep.
Okay.
You can get pork haggis, but it's usually cheap haggis.
It's like bringing coals to Newcastle. The nose is definitely smoky. What does that mean, the nose is definitely smoky? Whose nose?
Your nose will be, when you swirl it and you smell it, you will smell lots of smoke.
So my nose will definitely be smoky.
Yeah. Aroma. They say the nose.
Aroma.
But without much maritime character. It is smoky. It is smoky bacon crisp, peaches, and raisins.
Yeah. It's not going to have too much sea salt in it when they're saying not much maritime character, so it's not going to be as salty as your last drop.
It's all coded language here. Okay, I get it now. With water, the smoke is toned down a touch. The panel found grapes, and a capitalized panel. The panel found grapes and gingerbread.
They have a panel that tastes and selects. I don't know if they taste, but the panel selects, but the panel tastes and the whiskeys and tries to write descriptions. And
I think I passed that panel on the street earlier. It was the guy with the dog and the cup. mouthfeel. Okay, well, it still doesn't make any sense.
The way that it feels around your tongue when you swish it around in your mouth.
This is like newspeak. The mouthfeel.
The mouthfeel.
Yeah, but how do you make up a word like that, the mouthfeel? We don't talk like this.
That is fine Anglo-Saxon.
It's an exercise in creative writing, each one of these.
All right, well.
Trying to outdo one another.
One of the guys in the panel is a poet.
Apparently so.
A poet on the panel, so blame the poet.
Oh, no, I like his mouth words. But mouth, feet, and palate are also smoking. Sorry, I just keep saying a T there. Keep saying a T there. The mouth, feel, and palate are also smoky. Oak smoke and timber wood bonfires?
Yep, hence the name, timber.
Oh, how about that? Wow, they said the name inside the thing. I should have noticed that.
It's just like a movie.
Once diluted, the velvety orange flavors come through. A surprisingly good dram, truly worth trying.
Yep, and 23 years, it's waited 23 years to come to you.
I want to see a negative review by this guy.
There are some where they're like, give it a go, maybe you'll like it.
Tastes like the underside of a bus, you know, something like that.
Yeah, sometimes that's a good whiskey.
Tasted the bus, but now.
Usually, when they say, my opinion is when it says Parma Violets, that's their polite way of saying negative.
Well, what were we doing in March 1985? Because that's when this was distilled.
I'm not going to date myself.
1985, I was probably wearing bad fashion.
It was the 80s, enough said.
I had an Elfkin hairstyle trying to look like Pat Benatar still.
My God, Reagan was president.
Yeah. Reagan nominally was president.
It was in his second term.
Yeah. How is it?
It definitely, it's got a long-lasting after bite. It's different, but I can't really put it into words exactly how.
Are you turning Japanese?
Smoky and smooth.
If memory serves, water really opens this one that I'm
right.
passing.
I'll do the water next.
That's when the light shining from a croft window
I'm not getting the window.
Comforting on the nose, honey roast ham, crisp bacon, sticky toffee, chimney soot, right, lavender, and Christmas spices evoke light from the windows of a croft. A dram to come home to. Palate had smoke and burning scented wood, meatiness, dry ash, and caramel.
It's not as lingering, so
I wonder if part of my palate is just disabled because all this, like, all these words, I'm just, it tastes nice and all that. I do taste differences, but, caramel, I wasn't getting that. Unless this is the caramel one, is it?
No.
Then I'm hopeless because I thought maybe I'd taste a caramel there.
This is smoke perished rubber brake pads and melted wellies.
Brake pads.
Melted wellies. Those are boots.
Is the word brake pads in there?
Yes.
All right. I no longer take this seriously if they're going to start describing taste with brake pads.
Smoky bacon crisps, smoked sausage, poster paint, and caramel.
There is caramel in there.
Oh,
I knew
yeah.
I tasted caramel. Ha!
And brake pads.
I didn't get the brake pads.
I've never tasted brake pads. I would have no idea. They might taste like caramel.
I've smelled brake pads, and I wouldn't want to taste them.
Yeah, I could maybe smell brake pads at that. Actually.
You could smell brake pads.
Yeah.
Why would anybody want to do that?
Well, I wanted to taste the whiskey. I didn't want to taste the brake pads necessarily.
Why would anybody want to make a whiskey that had brake pad taste?
It wasn't intentional.
It's not intentional.
Oh, because they don't know what's going to happen when they put it in.
Exactly. It's like making wine. You'd never know what's going to happen.
Maybe there were some brake pads in the cask and they didn't realize it. But yeah.
That would explain it.
Who knows what the barrel was used for before.
Interesting.
They found the barrel in the dock and said, hey, let's make whiskey with it.
But if this becomes very popular, they're going to find barrels that did have contact with brake pads for future
use. Maybe. Brake pad candies. You can make the cartoon. You do the whole synergy thing. Get kids drinking whiskey early by having a brake pad cartoon characters.
In Europe, they were showing on an investigative TV show here. They've been playing with wines. They'll take cheaper grapes and then add yeast that will give off residues that will taste like a Merlot grape or like a Cabernet grape or like a Shiraz grape. So they're cheating. And so you get a cheaper wine, but it'll taste like the flavor of whatever grape it should mimic. And it's
scarier, they'll add lots of sugar and then put hydrochloric acid in the wine to have it kind of degrade and appear more alcoholic than some process that it actually sort of breaks the sugar down into some alcohol, but of course you have a lot of hydrochloric acid.
What happened?
The water really changed that one.
Which one was that again? Was that the brake pad?
That's not the brake pad. This one is the going home to the croft through the window.
You can taste.
Oh, this is the window one.
Yeah, this is the window one. I would suggest you taste that again after right. this little bit of water.
Still got to taste the window.
I like yours actually. The timber wood.
Not sure what line I'm supposed to be seeing, but it's good.
Don't go to the light.
It seems full flavor, and doesn't have a long aftertaste.
It's a little bit better, though, with the water.
Well, it's hard. There's three of them here. I cycled through others, so I can't really recall exactly what that tasted like last time I had it, but, it's good. It's
Water, this is sweet and sour raincoats.
Sweet and sour raincoats.
Yeah, with a little water, that's definitely a raincoat.
Okay, this is you can definitely, when you put it, just swirling it, you can smell, it smells like burnt rubber.
Oh, boy.
It does.
Let me at least try to get that. You have to swirl to get the burnt rubber. If you don't swirl, you don't smell the burnt rubber.
I'm not sure.
No, I can swirl. I can swirl.
He's a good swirler.
Am I swirling good?
A little more swirl.
I don't want it to splash.
It's not going to splash. It's designed not to splash.
Oh, I can make this splash.
Yeah, I can too.
Believe me, I can do it. All right, now I'm going to smell.
Do you smell burnt rubber? I do.
No, but I swear I can smell caramel now. And this is the one with no caramel at all, right?
No, it does have caramel in the description.
But it's like to the taste, it's sweet and sour.
That might be burnt rubber. Or burnt caramel, or...
Sweet and sour raincoats in the taste, though.
Yeah, I smell it. To me, it starts off like a burnt caramel, and then if you just take a little step away, it kind of goes off, and it smells like a burnt welly.
Do they have desserts here, or rubber, or anything?
No.
I'm getting a taste for windows, and well, dessert isn't really fruit, is it? I mean, you got a couple of burnt pieces of rubber or pieces of window or whatever it is that they.
The amount of sugar in these is probably qualify for dessert. Actually,
is this mine? I even forget what mine was. All right.
Bonfires, Great Britain there.
And water was put in this, right?
I didn't put water in it.
I didn't know.
Then it probably
was not. Yeah, let's put some water in it. Let me taste it again immediately after you do that, and I can compare it to what I remember. Thank you.
Oh, you get the ash from this.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a difference because it seems to spread out throughout my mouth, like more left to right than before, where it just sort of went straight down.
Mm. Yeah, it's...
That seems more intense.
It's more intense, and they call it opening the flavor, but really it just opens up the sensations of your taste buds, and I think it's just down to perhaps your tongue's less numb from all of the alcohol, and you're able to taste the flavors a little bit better.
That could be. But the water definitely had an effect. It reminds me of what happened to me in an Indian restaurant yesterday, actually, in Glasgow, where, I don't know if you've ever seen this, the guy comes out after you're finished, and there's a little tablet, looks like a tablet on a plate, and then he comes with a little pitcher of water and pours some water over it, and then this little tablet starts to unfold and turns into a little towel.
I've never seen that.
That's crazy.
Well, I did have some wine, but I know I saw it. And it was like something to wipe your face with. And the reason I know that exists is because I once bought this as part of a camping thing where you could basically have towels with you, except you don't have to carry towels. You simply pour water over them and they become towels. I thought it was really cool that in an Indian restaurant, they come, they make a big deal of it, they put it on a plate, and they pour water with a little pitcher, and voila, it turns into a towel.
Is it like astronaut towels?
Yeah, it's like astronaut, exactly like that. The thing is, I'm worried that some tourists are going to try to eat these things as some kind of like exotic dessert or something like that. Because the care with which they come and they pour the water over it makes it seem like it's something really expensive.
Well, what if they just don't wait until the guy comes and then it like...
Well, no, he comes with the little capsule and the pitcher.
And like give them a chance to just eat it?
No, but he makes a whole big, flourishing gesture.
They don't let you eat it.
Yeah, at some point someone's going to eat it, and then this whole thing is going to be stopped.
Imagine you'd have to save somebody from choking, and they'd have to like reach down their throat and pull out the little towel. I mean, that would be so nasty.
Or worse, what if you swallow the capsule first and then drink a glass of water? What happens then?
I guess you'd be full for quite some time, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I don't understand why
they... It's like a new diet pill.
Why can't they just hand you a damn towel? I don't understand what all this is about, but...
It's a theatrics. You go, ooh, and tip more, I don't know.
Well,
you come back.
I want to go.
Well, the thing is, I mean...
Remember not to eat the funny pill.
I went into this place, and I knew what to order, because I go to a lot of Indian places. And it was obvious I wasn't from around there, so I think they treated me a little bit differently. Like, they didn't, like, try to explain things. And when the guy did this, when he poured this over, he looked at me and said, "You know what this is for." And and it's like I had seen it 100 times before. So I think he might have falsely assumed that I was familiar with every single aspect of their particular operation and that Indian restaurants all over the world do this. But literally, this is the first time I've ever seen it.
I used to work in a Japanese restaurant where you would be brought oshibori, which are the little hand towels that you would use before, perhaps after your meal. And those are, you know, that's a really nice idea. It's like, oh yeah, allow me to freshen up. Especially, you know, the little towelettes that you get when you're eating, like, spare ribs or... Those are pretty useless, the little ones that come in.
Well, there's two different kinds. There's the kind you have at first, to, sort of hot, and they're cloth, and you know, just basically rinse your hands.
They give you the little finger bowl to dip your hands in.
But then afterwards, they give you the things that are in little packages, little condom packages, and you just take those out and, you know, get all the crap off your hands that way. And two different things. You guys want to describe the dining experience we had tonight at the Kurdish place? We had quite an adventure.
Yeah, we forgot to record the rainstorm.
Well,
that washed us out.
It happened so quickly we didn't have time to record it. But we were basically just sitting outside minding our own business. We ordered an appetizer and we started drinking wine. And, well, Peg, why don't you describe what happened next?
That's what it was. We were drinking alcohol at the place.
It was because we mentioned the rain cloud overhead, and it got angry.
Well, it was dark and ominous.
It had gone from being sunny to dark and ominous in a matter of about 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, there was this large cloud overhead, and, you know, speak of the devil. And so I said, "Oh, maybe if it starts to rain, you'll want my hat, Rob." And then he said, no, I'm fine." And then all of a sudden, pelting down, and it just... Once it started, it was full out for about a few minutes, and then it blew over.
Everybody, people sitting outside, everybody charged for the door. Everyone got up from the table and just ran into the place.
Oh, yeah.
But there was no room inside the place for us.
So, it's the last one who's
like... There was an hour wait for an actual table.
It's weird when you have an appetizer and then they tell you there are no tables.
Yeah.
So what? That's like being in some kind of limbo where you don't know...
Standing in the doorway, holding our appetizers and wine...
Yeah,
that was strange. It was being a local. I'm used to the rain, so I was the last one in the door, and I couldn't get in the door, so I'm actually having to stand out in the rain. I'm like, is there any room? Can people move in? They're all huddled together there in the hallway, looking like survivors. You know, just jumped ship, and yeah.
And then somehow you managed to sell a bottle of wine.
Did, yeah, there was an Australian couple who were debating the fact that whether or not there was an alcohol license and what to do because they wanted
people and they were going off to buy a bottle of wine. This is a bring-your-own place.
I explained to them it's BYO, there isn't any alcohol here actually, but they're okay with you bringing your own bottle of wine. There's a slight corkage fee. And then, because I'd brought two bottles for our dinner, I thought... Well, we're probably, since we were coming to the Whiskey Society, we're probably not going to go through two full bottles. Fair enough. I just bought the second one, if they're willing to buy it off me. So I offered it up to them, and they seemed very, very happy to take it off, to buy it off me.
You sold it at cost.
I did sell it at cost. Although, in retrospect, perhaps I should have at least charged them a little finder's fee.
Oh, a corkage fee. Well, God's name is a corkage fee anywhere.
A corkage fee is if a restaurant has a policy of they're not going to have their own alcohol license, so they welcome you to bring your own bottle.
And then they can charge you for you bringing your own bottle.
Yeah, they can charge you a corkage fee anywhere from like £1 to £3.
It's amazing when they can simply just charge you for something that really they're not doing anything. Like, it's like you charging them because you're sitting in their chair, you know.
But you're using their wine glasses that they have to wash.
Well, what if we brought our own wine glasses? Would that avoid the corkage fee? Probably not. They come up with some
are really nasty. I mean, like, I'm bringing my own plates.
And it's not a glass fee. It's a cork. Basically, they're charging you to open the bottle, even if you open the bottle yourself.
You can also dispose of the bottle when you're done.
Well, we can do that, too. You know, it avoids all these charges.
We can't really control how much we drink if we bring our own. So, I mean, we could each bring our own bottle of cask-strength whiskey and sit there and chug it and then get really obnoxiously drunk, and then they'd have to handle us. So maybe it's a handler's fee, really.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it sound so impersonal.
Half the time, they, even though it says cookage fee, they never actually charge it. So.
Did they actually charge it?
I don't remember. I didn't see it.
I didn't see it. And actually, usually I tip a little bit more if they didn't charge it, because I'd like to encourage them not to charge us for drinking our own wine.
There, you know, I was in Holland, and so many places there would not give you tap water. In fact, a couple places said they weren't allowed to give you tap water.
I think they're lying when they say that.
I think so, too, because some places did give us tap water. But I think what they want to do is they want to sell you water. Another place charged us for tap water. It wasn't much. It was like, I don't know, it was like €1.50 for a pitcher. But still, charging you for something that they just pour out of the drain or out of the sink, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah,
well, who knows? Where it could have been out of the toilet. Nobody knows.
Well, what's worse is, like, most of the bottled water that people are paying for is actually just tap water from another place, you know, like the hills of Pittsburgh or something, you know. And so charging for bottled water, I think, is just obscene and obnoxious anyhow. But, yeah, a lot of times you'll find here... when you say, and we'd all like water, they'll say sparkling or still, and that's the insinuation that of course you're getting bottled. And then when you say no, just tap, they'll look at you as if like you've just said, no, I'd like to lick the floor, thank you. You know, it just...
Although sometimes they wonder whether you want city water here. There's certain parts of town. We won't go there.
Okay, now I got to find out more about that, but I'll find out later. But I will say, you know, at least in New York, not only do they not have a problem giving you tap water, but they'll give it to you without you asking. And I don't really know any other place that does that.
Really? I thought they were required to ask you now.
There was a time when we had a drought where they were required to ask, or you had to ask them, but now they just give it to you.
I actually like it at places where they give you, like, a jug or bottle of tap water. So then, you know, yes, you've got your tap water, but you don't have to keep saying, I'm really thirsty, can I have more? Mm-hmm. And I like places where when you order wine or beer, they give you water without asking.
That's responsible, isn't it? I think if it was responsible hosting, because, you know, your guests will have lesser hangovers if for every drink they have a glass of water. And it also... it encourages better socialization when people aren't just drinking only alcohol and getting really drunk. I just think that it's healthier overall. But people on the other side of saying, don't give everybody water, will say, well, it's just a waste of water, because if somebody doesn't drink it, then that's bad for water conservation. And it's an insult to the environment that way. So I can see both sides of it, but I always get water. I always drink the water.
Water is good for you. Let that be the message that we leave here tonight.
And if it boosts your immune system and exposes you to some new parasites, well, there you go.
He's pouring water as we speak, which I think is amazing. Yes, no better sound in the world.
Ah, yes. Memories from last August. I was over in Scotland visiting former USBers Mutant Rob and Peg. And that was recorded in the Whiskey Society, which is this big, huge building filled with people all sampling different types of Scottish whiskey, actually Japanese too, I guess, and other parts of the world. And as you could hear, the descriptions are simply phenomenal and amazing and imaginative and all that. Everybody in Scotland seems to be a whiskey fanatic or an expert. They always are able to tell you exactly how to drink it and what to look out for and various other things like that. Last week we played the first part of this. This was the second and last part of this particular aspect of the trip. There's one more section where you'll hear me try haggis for the first time. Yes, I actually tried that. This is I guess it's a breakfasty type food that you have, and it's served or at least cooked in a sheep's lung. Is that right? Yeah, sheep's lung. It's really kind of disgusting sounding. And you'll hear my reaction, unedited, as it happened. I'm not sure when we'll get to that. That'll be probably maybe next month sometime. Next week, I'd like to get back to a regular one-hour show where we take phone calls and talk about what's going on in the world. But, you know, today... today I needed this. I'm really glad that we had this half hour to fall back on, because after driving through rush hour traffic and racing to get here in time for the show, and literally making it within 30 seconds, I don't know how that happened, because I started off in Manhattan, and you know, I thought I had plenty of time, 3 hours, you know, that's usually enough time to get back here, and to make it within 30 seconds, which is always when I seem to be able to make it, no matter what. You know, I could start from California, and I'd make it here with 30 seconds to spare. It's just my lot in life, I suppose. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. What I'd like to do is go out with the Scottish music that we played a little bit of before, and this was recorded off the radio there in Edinburgh. I recorded a bunch of things, but there wasn't very much in the way of music. There was a lot of BBC and talk and things like that, which is fine, but not all that interesting right now. We'll hear that. If you want to write to us and comment on any of this, write to otw@2600.com. We'll be happy to read your letters on the air if they're civil and clean. Let's go out with this. I have no idea what it's called. I don't know what the words mean. If anybody out there has a translation for what we heard before on the Scottish radio or can translate this song, by all means write to us. otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for the basketball game immediately following this.
Nad chaimi shias an annawing an jay, gurnis a fulam fachol ye, isco a leis a scroon an shay, vihies juni nad cain. O arichen racham it shias, racham it shias, so hooknam it she is. Oh, Arichen, racham it she is. Gurnis a nawing lehe. Nad chaimi she is gan a nawing in jay. Gurnis a fulam fachko ye. Sko ye van trus. Guns, coon, and shade, the years, June, not here. Vaiken, Racham, it she is, Hokam, it she is, Achik, she is. Vaiken, Racham, it she is, Lordies, and now in Lehe. Nad chaimi shias gan annawing yn jay, gwrnis a falam fafgo ye, isco a leis ysgrwn yn sheith, fych ye, stiwn mi nad chaim.
Time is 6:45. You are tuned to WUSB 90.1 FM. My name is Mike Solano, and coming up for you the next couple of nights, it's Stony Brook against Vermont at Pritchard Gymnasium. Tomorrow, it's the men, the big game with the America East regular season title on the line. But as polite society would dictate, it's ladies first as the women get set to host the Catamounts tonight. It's Jeff Bernstein and Sue Serafini. Stand by courtside with all the action. Guys, take it away.
Thanks a lot, Mike, and welcome to Stony Brook, Vermont, part one, as I call it, and two big games coming up in the next 48 hours. My name is Jeff Bernstein, joined by Sue Serafini, and Sue, a big 48 hours here for both programs, the women's program tonight, the men's program tomorrow. Very, very exciting here on campus.
It absolutely is, Jeff, and certainly we'll have some green in the house both tonight and tomorrow night, but hopefully our fans will come out and give us an opportunity both evenings to support our Stony Brook Seawolves as both the men and the women tip off against Vermont this week.
Stony Brook looking to split the next two games at worst. They'll be in that 4-5 game. They'll be the fourth seed, which I just found out will be Friday night at 8:15.
Yep.
It'll be the last game on the Friday night slate, which is, you know, I'm not sure for the players it's a good thing. For fans, it's a great thing because they get a whole day of quarterfinals. And then Stony Brook would be the last game of the night playing either Binghamton, UMBC in that game. So they could take care of business and they beat Vermont tonight. They're already the fourth seed.
They're
already locked into the fourth seed. They've got a tough Vermont team. They've played very, very well. They've been ranked this year.
Yep.
Slipped a little, but still a highly competitive team that the Seawolves are going to play tonight.
They are, Jeff, and they put up a lot of good numbers, both on the offensive rebounding end as well as their scoring production. They really get it done on both ends of the floor, but it's going to be interesting to see how they do it on the road this evening here at Pritchard.
Well, the Seawolves' last game, tough loss at BU, 69-59, 10-point loss at Aganis Arena. That loss for the Seawolves, it was a tough loss, but one highlight of that game, Kirsten Gita eclipsed the 1,000-point barrier. Glad that she got that really out of the way, could now concentrate down the stretch. But just to backtrack, anytime a player scores 1,000 points, Sue, it's a great milestone.
It is, and it's a great milestone for the program as well to have yet another Seawolf make history here for the women's program, and Kirsten certainly deserves that opportunity and has deserved that over the last 3 years as she's gotten more and more playing time. She's found a way to stay on the floor this year to give her more opportunity to score, and I know that she's glad that it's off her back and certainly behind her as she looks forward to the conclusion of the season and then playoffs.
There will be a brief presentation today to honor Kirsten Jeter. Not many juniors get 1,000 points.
They don't. I mean, you know, most programs, again, a lot of juniors are just starting to see the playing times that Kirsten has had the luxury on some level to have as a freshman, and she's earned it. She's certainly an athletic and very talented young lady that has grown her game, and I'm excited about where she's taken her game this year and I think really what is ahead of her as she finishes out this year and heads into her final season.
I know, Sue, you played at the higher level. Have you seen many 1,000? I'm sure you maybe saw some 2,000-point scores.
I've been fortunate, Jeff, I'll be honest, that I've been a part of coaching programs that we, on a yearly basis, have put up some good numbers on the offensive end,
right.
And we've been able to get some players at the various institutions I've been at. And at one time, we had 4 1,000-point scores on the floor my final year coaching, all 4 of which are in the Hall of Fame at Kansas State right now. So, again, it just depends on where you're at and how lucky you get. But those players all had significant time as freshmen, much like Kirsten Jeter.
You know, the other thing, too, if you really look into the 1,000 points, you know, Kirsten has done it while the team really has struggled at times to win some games. So she's scored the 1,000 points while they really have not won that many games. So that is a testament to itself.
It is, and I bet you if you were to ask her as a player, she would trade the 1,000 points
yes.
to win 1,000 games or thereabouts, you know, a couple more games than they've won. But and that's the type of person she is. But this accolade and kind of this honor is that she's achieved is significant of her career and of her commitment to the game and certainly the coaching staff's commitment to her as a player because they're putting her on the floor and they're giving her the opportunity to achieve great things. And that takes, you know, confidence and trust in that young lady.
We're going to take our first break of the Seawolves pregame show. And when we return, we'll talk to the head coach of the Stony Brook Seawolves, Michelle Cherry. You're listening to the longtime home of Stony Brook Women's Basketball, WUSB.
Hey And back here inside the WUSB studios, our first update of the night on the women's side or the men's side. No other America East action today other than the game that you're about to be listening to about 10 minutes away from tip-off at Pritchard Gymnasium as Stony Brook gets set to host Vermont. Meanwhile, over in the top 25, three games on the women's side, all getting underway at 7 o'clock, all pitting Big East teams against one another, so that conference, a busy night for them. We'll get you those scores here in just a second. Marquette will be at number 8, Notre Dame. It's Villanova hosting number 11, Georgetown, and number 7, West Virginia, is on the road at Cincinnati. Busier on the men's side, however, where there's plenty of top 25 action to talk about. The big one in the Big East, number 4, Syracuse, trying to solidify its lead half game over Villanova in the Big East. The Wildcats losing on Saturday, the Orange Idol. Syracuse back in action visiting Providence, who are just 4-10 in conference play. Meanwhile, 8 o'clock, it'll be number 6, Kansas, visiting Texas Tech. Number 12, New Mexico at Colorado State. Another 7 o'clock one in the Big East, Louisville hosting number 13, Georgetown. Number 22, Northern Iowa, is at Evansville in Missouri Valley action. And Florida will host number 17, Tennessee. That game getting underway at 9 o'clock. Send it back to Pritchard Gymnasium with Jeff and Sue.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Back here at Pritchard. 48 hours of Stony Brook, Vermont. The women in about 7 minutes. Spoke to head coach Michelle Cherry about tonight's contest, and these were her comments.
Moments before tonight's game, we're talking to the head women's basketball coach, Michelle Cherry, Stony Brook versus Vermont. And coach, some thoughts coming into tonight's game.
You know, it's a big game, conference game. We're winding down the season. Obviously, you know, both teams want to have that momentum going into the conference tournament. Vermont has been playing really well. They're second in our conference right now. Definitely a challenge for us. They're very talented, got some great guards, probably two best players in the conference at the point in the two guards. So, you know, huge challenge for us, but, you know, we played well for part of a game up there. It really, you know, as usual for us, it seems, we just came down to making shots, and they made more shots than we did, and that's, you know, we lost the game up there. But we do like, you know, where we are right now, and we kind of like how we're playing. It's just, you know, got to get some of these shots to fall.
Before we go back to the game, good for Kirsten Gita to break the 1,000-point barrier. I'm sure she's happy she finished it off. I'm sure you're happy she's got that over with, and now you can get back to, just trying to win some games down the stretch here.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, she really didn't even know that she was about to hit 1,000, until we told her. So it's not like it's something that she was following and trying to get to that number. But it is good that it's done with now. She'll have the presentation for her, you know, before the game, and then that's, you know, we can put that to rest and focus on the bigger fish to fry, I guess.
Yeah, I know you always take it game by game, but I would assume you want the split here to get into that 4-5 game at worst.
Well, yeah, I mean, if, you know, we win one of these next two games, then we've got the 4 seed. So that's pretty much our focus. You know, we've just got to win one of the next two to hold on to the 4 seed, and, you know, which is very doable. You know, we could win both these games, but, you know, we got both of them at home, which is good. It's nice to not only have the bye last weekend, like we talked about last week, but to have, you know, finish the conference with two games at home before we go into conference tournament. So we're pretty happy with the way the schedule worked out.
Any other concerns about Vermont going into tonight's game?
Yeah, you know, they run some dribble-drive offense, so it's really going to be important that we not give up middle off the dribble. Defensively, we've got to keep force to the outside. We've got to be ready to switch on some of the illegal screens that they set, which they're kind of what I call the excuse me picks. They don't really look like they're screens, but they're trying to set moving screens. So we got to be ready to switch on some of those. We're going to throw some different looks at them defensively, you know. So it's really their guard play is key to them, and you know we've got to stop some of their guard play. And at the same time, you know, it comes down to us making shots. They zoned us a lot last time. I expect them to zone us quite a bit tonight. So you know, we've got our guards especially have to be ready to knock down some shots, which will open things up inside a little bit for our bigs.
And the health of the team, I guess it's as good as it's going to get at this point.
You know what, this time of year, I don't think there's a team in America that isn't hurting. You know, we've got our shares of aches and pains, just like everybody else does, but it's that time of year now. We're getting into where it's almost March Madness, and, you know, you have to put that stuff aside and just go out and play.
Coach, best of luck tonight.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
I was the head coach of the Stony Brook Seawolves, Michelle Cherry, talking about tonight's game. And, you know, if you're Stony Brook, you want to get the win under your belt to clinch that fourth spot. Pretty much every spot is almost secured. For Vermont, they're going to need Hartford to lose out, which for the next two games is going to be pretty remote at that point. I mean, they play Hartford in the last game of the season, so they're going to need Hartford to lose the game before that and then beat them to cause the tie, and then I'm not sure what the tiebreaker is after that. So Vermont pretty much, you know, if you look at the Catamounts, they're pretty much locked into the two seed, you know, at this point. So, I mean, obviously Vermont wants to win out as much as possible. You want to get as many wins as you can. But if you're Stony Brook, you want to try to build, as Coach Cherry said, you want to try to build momentum, try to get off, beat one of the top three teams. Because only BU has been beaten this year by other than anyone from the top three.
That's exactly right, Jeff. I think right now it really comes down to, for Vermont, to not overlook a Stony Brook Seawolves team who really can step up and bite them. And then for Stony Brook to realize that any game, anything can happen. And why not this game? Why not have the chance at Vermont to play Vermont at home and have this be one of the two wins that we would need to secure that fourth place seed? And that's, Coach Sherry said it exactly right. It's the focus for tonight's game. It's focus that both teams are bringing to the floor. And it is, you know, we're on the heels of March Madness right now, and everything matters. And both teams you'll see tonight that are going to tune themselves up both offensively and defensively in ways that will prepare them for their conference championship.
Well, Vermont is the defending America East champions last year. They actually sort of upset Hartford last year, who went into the tournament 16-0 in the semifinals to win the tournament. So this is a team who wants to get back to the NCAA tournament. They have two major seniors on the team, Nate Kasopoulos, who's probably going to win Player of the Year in the America East, and Courtney Pilipaitis, who's going to be a first-team all-conference player. So those are the two players that the Seawolves are going to have to really deal with to have a shot to win tonight.
But it's no mystery. I mean, certainly they have done very well for the Catamounts over their four-year career, and right now they're getting some national recognition as they did earlier in the year with a national ranking. So it's no secret what they do in terms of how they run their guards off probably high screens and probably bring them off some baseline low screens to see if they can get opportunities to score throughout the perimeter and or beat you off the dribble. And I think if we defend very well off the dribble tonight, Jeff, we will have a very good chance of challenging Vermont and what Vermont really wants to do on the offensive end.
Well, the America East schedulers were helpful for Stony Brook this year. No more road games. They finished with the road in terms of the regular season. Stony Brook on Saturday will host Pink Zone on Saturday and will also be senior day for the Seawolves. So this is not the last game for Stony Brook. They still have a game on Saturday and could be a huge game all the way around, because they'll win them. If they don't win tonight, then they need that win against UMBC to get the fourth spot. It's senior night and it's also Pink Zone. So a lot going on if they somehow don't get it tonight.
Absolutely, and I know that we've got a lot of in-game promotions happening. We've partnered with the hospital across the street to really create an awesome pink zone and hopefully a pink out here in our traditional red out at Pritchard Arena. So we're excited, looking forward to certainly tonight's game, but more so to finishing out the season here at Pritchard for our ladies on Saturday.
And if you haven't heard, the athletic department has announced tomorrow for the Stony Brook men's game, they want everyone to wear red. They want to try to have a red out. And then, like you mentioned, on Saturday, it's Pink Zone. They want everyone to wear pink for Pink Zone on Saturday. So big couple of games coming up here at Pritchard Gymnasium. Two against Vermont, which are huge. And getting ready for the public address announcer here at Pritchard Gymnasium for the national anthem.
At this time, we'd like to ask you to please rise, remove your caps, and join our players, coaches, and officials as we honor America, those who protect our freedom with the playing of our national anthem, being performed tonight by the Spirit of Stony Brook, the Stony Brook University Pep Band. Thank you.
Back here at Pritchett Gymnasium, Stony Brook and Vermont. The Seawolves come in with the, right now they are the fifth seed. Vermont comes in as the second seed. And, you know, you look at the body of work, and you go back and you look at the schedule. If Stony Brook would have beaten Albany at Albany, you know, they lost that overtime game, the fourth would have been locked up already.
That was a definite, significant, pivotal point for us in our season this year, Jeff. And I know that Coach has probably talked through that and has really mentioned that several times to the team. But you can't do anything. You can't go back and fix it. You can't go back and make it any different. You've just got to pick up and continue to go on and refocus the team and understand what is at stake every single night, that it really does come down to the Albanys, but it also comes down to the Vermonts and Hartfords when you have a chance to compete at that level.
Congratulations to Kirsten Jeter, who was just given a ball in honor of scoring 1,000 points, and then she just tosses it to her dad in the stands, so her family is here tonight to watch the game. Kirsten from Elmont, which is in Nassau County, so a great story for a local player to get the 1,000 points here at Stony Brook. Let's look at the starting lineups for tonight's game between the Catamounts of Vermont and the Stony Brook Seawolves. The head coach is Sharon Dawley. The associate head coach is Stephen Lamford. The assistants are Jen McCauley and Kat Arnold. A 6-foot freshman from Ontario, number 54, Kendra Sato. 6'3 senior from Essex Junction, Vermont, number 52, Alyssa Sheptik. 5'9 senior from Iowa, number 45, Sophia Iwobi. 5'10 senior from Ontario, number 4, May Katsopoulos. And a 6'1 senior from Ontario, number 3, Courtney Pilipitis. No, this is not a hockey team. You know, a lot of Canadian flavor there, but this is women's basketball. For the Stony Brook Seawolves, the head coach is Michelle Cherry. The assistants are Evelyn Thompson, Olivia Doughty, Emily Hardy, and the director of basketball operations is Christine Nix. 5'5 junior from Winco, Pennsylvania, out of Cheltenham High School, number 4, Misha Horsey. 5'6 sophomore from Teaneck, New Jersey, out of Teaneck High School, number 12, Tamil Murray. 5'10 senior from Silver Spring, Maryland, out of Springbrook High School, number 24, Joya Daniels. 5'10 junior from Elmont, New York, out of Elmont High School, number 32, Kirsten Jita. And a 6'1 sophomore from Glen Burnie, Maryland, out of the McDonough School, number 42, Destiny Jacobs. Vermont wearing the green, trimmed in yellow and white. Catamounts on the shorts, AmeriEast logo also on the right side of the shorts and on a patch. The Seawolves wearing the home whites trimmed in red and blue. AmeriEast logo on the left side of the shorts. So the Seawolves and the Vermont Catamounts here at Pritchett Gymnasium. Seawolves trying to clinch the fourth seed with a win tonight. Catamounts have a slim hope of trying to tie Hartford. They need to win out and have Hartford lose out. So this is still a big game for the Catamounts. And also in terms of a potential at-large bid, Catamounts need to win as many games as possible.
They do, and certainly tonight puts them in position for a great showdown on Saturday against Hartford at Hartford. And much like our game tomorrow night with Vermont coming in here for the men, it will be a 1-2 on Saturday for the women at Hartford. And I'll be curious to see what really is at stake and almost like a glimpse, if you will, Jeff, of a look of what might happen in the championship round next week.
Stony Brook coming in at 8-18, 6-8 in the AmeriEast. Vermont is 22-5, 12-2 in the AmeriEast. Vermont has probably already clinched a WNIT bid with the 22 wins. They probably are looking for a lot more. They went to the NCAA tournament last year. And the Sheftik and Stony Brook to tip. Katsopoulos wins the tip. They have it on the right as Vermont goes from left to right on your radio dial. Up top is Katsopoulos, launches the long three and hits from the men's line. So Vermont right away up 3-0.
Pretty much an unguarded look at the top of the key, Jeff, that May Katsopoulos had opportunity to look and make.
Top of the key is Daniels. Over to Murray, to Jita. Jita puts up the 16-footer, a little short. That's tipped out of bounds by Sheftik. Actually, that was Cito who tipped it out of bounds, and it'll be Stony Brook basketball. 19-27 remaining in the first half. 3-0 Vermont. Horsey takes it out on the baseline up top to Jita. Dribbles to the right elbow. Up top is Murray. who resets the offense. Murray drives the lane, puts up high glass. It's no good. And rebounded by Pilipaitis. Pilipaitis, 6'1", point guard. Over on the right wing to Iwobi. Iwobi back to Katsopoulos. On the left wing is Pilipaitis. Pilipaitis back up top to Iwobi. 16 on the shot clock at the 19-minute mark. Cito on the right wing drives the baseline and is fouled by Jeter. And that's something Michelle Cherry didn't want to see here early in the game.
No, but again, you know, Vermont's going to isolate Kirsten Jeter and try to take her off the dribble to get her out of the lineup because right now she's scoring double figures for us and really contributing on both ends of the floor.
3-0 as Pilipaitis to Katsopoulos, blocked by Horsey in the corners, picked up by Jeter, over to Horsey, and here come the Seawolves. In transition, on the left wing is Murray. Murray up top to Jeter. Jeter dribbles to the right side at the 18:45 mark, over to Daniels, right wing. 18 on the shot clock. Daniels crosses over. Inside, actually, right wing is Jacobs. Takes the 15-footer, and Jacobs with the big shot there for the Seawolves.
Destiny's becoming a face-up, face-to-the-basket shooter, Jeff, not just a back-to-the-basket player, which is a nice addition to her game.
3-2 Vermont. Cito drives the lane. Shot off the glass is good. That was actually Alyssa Sheftick off the glass. And it's 5-2 Catamounts. 18-10 remaining in the first half. Horsey into the front court on the right wing. On the right, over in the corner is Murray. Murray with one dribble. Back up top to Jeter. Jeter tries to split the defense. Pass over to Murray. A little bit too strong. It's out of bounds. And Vermont will get the ball back with 17:58 remaining. Coming in the game for Stony Brook is Sam Landers. Early entry for Landers. 5'7 freshman from Virginia. Landers didn't come into the game against BU for at least till the second half. Iwobi drives the lane. He's double-teamed on the baseline. Kicks it back up top to Cito. Over to Iwobi. 13 on the shot clock. Baseline is Sheftick. 9 on the clock. Sheftick, turnaround baseline jump shot is no good. And Kirsten Jeter comes down with the rebound for the Seawolves. Jeter over to Murray. 17:27 remaining in the first half. Landers on the right wing. Inside to Jacobs. Jacobs drives, steps back. Over to Daniels. Layup is no good, but she's fouled on the play.
Good heads-up play by Destiny Jacobs. Knew that she didn't have the face-up shot. Used her one dribble to kind of create space in the low block area and found a cutting Joya Daniels as she got to the rim and was able to make an attempt at a layup but got fouled and now gets a chance to shoot two free throws.
So Joya Daniels goes to the line, averaging 8.1 points per game, 3.8 rebounds per game. First free throw is up and good. Horsey back in the game for the Seawolves, replaces Landers. That may have been a little bit of a teaching point substitution for Horsey.
It was. Last time down the floor, Misha did not run offense the way Coach Sherry wanted her to in terms of where she delivered the ball and where she ended up on the floor. I think Coach Sherry's trying to get Misha in the offensive swing of things a little bit more, Jeff, as a perimeter shooter. And she did not put herself in position to be able to be that for us in that set.
Daniels hits the second free throw. And it's 5-4 Vermont. Seawolves trying to hang in. Come up here with the upset. Katsopoulos crosses the midcourt line. On the right wing is Pilipaitis. Pilipaitis' pass is recovered by Katsopoulos. Up top to Pilipaitis, round the horn. Three-point shot by Cito's off the side of the rim, no good. Jacobs knocks it out of bounds, and Vermont will retain possession. 16:56 remaining first half, and it's 5-4 Vermont. Vermont